Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio's Home Edition, recorded on this date, November 2nd, 2020. Well, this week, America's election carnival will come to a head. What happens over the months following is anyone's guess, but there's less uncertainty for the Julian Assange extradition hearing in London's Old Bailey, where presiding magistrate Vanessa Baratzer adjourned proceedings, saying, quote, "One way or another, my decision is likely to go after the U.S. elections." The hearing will resume January 4th, and Baratzer will assuredly rule as bidden by whomever is residing at Pennsylvania Avenue. Ron Ridenour is a journalist, author, editor, and peace and social justice activist. The expat American has lived and worked in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Bolivia, and currently calls Denmark home. He worked, too, as a special correspondent and freelancer for numerous publications in Europe, the U.S., and Latin America, and served as press aide to Bolivia's president, Evo Morales, and the governments of Cuba and Nicaragua. Some of Ridenour's many book titles include The Russia Peace Threat, Pentagon on Alert, Cuba Revolution in Action, Backfire, the CIA's Biggest Burn, and his latest, still in progress, Winding Brook Stories. Ron's articles feature on numerous online sites, including at thiscan'tbehappening.net, where his A Horror Story in Two Parts, Will England Send Assange the Messenger to America's Dungeons?, and A Travesty of Justice, UK Caters to the US Government's Desire to Crush Assange, appear. Today, Ron Ridenour and Coming Out of the Trenches for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Welcome to the program, Ron.
Glad to be here.
Well, it's my great pleasure to have you. Now, Ron, given the state of the media, I'm certain, even at this late date, there are those listening needing to know who and what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks is. Would you please enlighten them and us?
Well, I think I could find four words to say the whole story. Free press equals free Assange. This man and his compatriots in WikiLeaks since, I think, 2006 when they started, have revealed more corruption, lies, thievery, murders, torture, the machinations as to how and why superpower or the main superpower, the only superpower perhaps, the United States, goes to war, and many other countries. I mean, he is not simply out after the Yankees. He takes on government corruption and crimes, war crimes and other crimes, around the world. I'm sure that Russia is not all that glad about him. He's also revealed some problems in Russia. But of course, the mass media has adopted the Wall Street program that he is only an anti-Yankee and he must be persecuted, prosecuted, murdered, and tortured to death. That's probably their favorite way of murdering people. And I think the worst about this is the Daniel Ellsberg, of course, you know, the Pentagon Papers whistleblower. We both lived in Los Angeles when he worked for RAND and then later. And he became an anti-war activist and we got to know each other and we're corresponding even in these days. And as he has said recently, persecution against him and the importance of the Pentagon Papers is actually the case of Julian Assange is even worse. I mean, the treatment against him is worse than what Nixon tried to do to Ellsberg. At that time, the mass media was not entirely in Wall Street and London City's hands. And the Supreme Court was not totally only a function of Wall Street and the Pentagon and the White House. At that time, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld the right of free press to print the Pentagon Papers. Today, we don't have that situation. We are in a state of what I would call pre-fascist state in many countries, including, of course, the United States. So, you know, what has WikiLeaks accomplished? I mean, just technologically, they invented this safe drop, you know, the drop drop off, and this whole thing of what do you call it, encryption. That started with WikiLeaks, and this guy, when he was a kid, you know, he was a hacker for fun, and then he became a revolutionary. Well, then of course that's an extra reason why they hate him. He's a real revolutionary and an anarchist revolutionary. So of course the Guardian that first embraced him gave him up to the dogs. They were also threatened by the Secret Service in London. They invaded their offices after they printed a lot of the stuff that WikiLeaks gave them, which, of course, is Chelsea Manning. We have to always remember her. She is the major source for the most important WikiLeaks leaks that all kinds of mass media use. None of them, of course, are before any court for doing the same thing that and using the same material that Assange used. Now, Assange, though, is not in this for money. He's not in this for political positions. And many people in the mass media are. The owners of the mass media, of course, are capitalists, almost all of them, or the media is state-owned, and who are the states? You know what? In Denmark, for example, I've just written a letter to the general secretary of the major media, the state-sponsored media in Denmark, and let her know that she is a tramp for Wall Street. They have not even printed anything, or in radio, in TV, in the newspapers that of this hearing that just took place, you know, for 3 weeks, and it's a kangaroo court. Stalin would be proud of what these so-called Brit judges are doing. And, of course, Goebbels would be as well. And they're torturing this man to death. Well, you could predict this, you know. You could foresee it. In fact, I think I did back in 2010. And he did himself.
Yeah, this is really poignant that all along, Julian Assange was, while he was in the embassy, the Ecuador embassy in London, taking claiming sanctuary and being granted sanctuary by that country and citizenship, he said the reason he was doing that was because exactly what would happen if he didn't, if he walked out those doors, is exactly what's happening now. But there was all kinds of charges, rape charges in Sweden and other things brought up against him that all fell down under examination. I spoke with Neil Meltzer not too long ago. He's the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture and Inhumane Treatment. He visited Julian Assange in Belmarsh Prison in London after he'd been dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy. What do you know, Ron, about the conditions under which Julian Assange is currently being held?
Well, I'm glad to hear that you've been able to interview Niels Meltzer. He's a hero for our heroes. He's defied the bastards, also the bastards in the United Nations, and there are many of them, but, you know, especially the Yankee and the Brit bastards. There were never any rape charges. This is also something that I finally got the Denmark's radio to change in one of their headlines when they recently, when he was up before a hearing last October. Their headlines in the major newspapers here, headlines was, you know, Julian Assange charged with rape. He was only charged with being interrogated, with a hearing. They wanted the police, or rather the political prosecutors, wanted him to come to Sweden again, and they wanted to ask him questions. He was never charged with any crime. And this is one of the worst things that the mass media has done. They keep telling us this lie. You know, there are all kinds of people in the world, unfortunately, many women who think that he was harmful to these two Swedes. He did nothing of the kind, and he was not charged with it. The first woman, Anna Arden, wrote an email to all of her friends after he had raped her the night before. Saying that now we're having a celebration for this man, this great man, this great intelligent man who is here at my house. We're having a party, and I'm so pleased. She tried later on to get that erased, you know, and it didn't work. He went, you know, so later on, she and this other woman, said, well, they would like him to take a test for, you know, if he had a disease or something. Apparently, a condom came off or it didn't work or what do I know. But at any rate, there were no charges. And the first prosecutor looked at it and she said, and he came and she said, well, there's no case. So he went back to London. But then the CIA got into the picture, rang up their counterparts in Sweden and said, hey, we want you to get this guy one way or another. Put in another prosecutor. And they did. And there's all kinds of evidence that's come out in the extradition hearings, letters from high ups in London telling Sweden, don't give up the ship, you know, keep on persecuting him, keep on trying to get him to be extradited to Sweden. Well, you know, the Goebbels, you know, you want to confuse people, you want people on your side. So what you do, like Trump says, the only thing I think he said that's true is fake news. Well, so you concoct a lie. Oh, and it has to be a big lie, you know, and you just repeat it constantly. And then, you know, you're on your way. And that's what they've done with Julian Assange.
Yeah. And I fell into the trap, too, because the allegations, the rape allegations or sexual assault allegations, as you say, the charges were never brought. They sort of seesawed back and forth. They kept coming back and going away and coming back and going away. The condom that you mentioned, too, was something that Nils Meltzer looked into. And when the said condom was produced for testing, there was no DNA of any kind on this condom. It was an entirely untouched and unused condom, and even strange that nobody's even finger grease could be produced on it. All very strange. And yet, there he is. He spent years hiding out in the Ecuadorian embassy in difficult conditions, especially after the change of government in that country became so hostile to him, and then dragged out. The first time that had ever happened, somebody arrested, dragged away from sanctuary in an embassy, and thrown into Belmarsh prison, where even today he's in solitary confinement almost for 23 and more hours of a day.
Right. And he can't talk to any prisoners. All of the other prisoners there, most of them are really top security prisoners, you know, murderers and convicted terrorists who've done terrorist actions. And they can talk to one another. He can't. He can't even see his lawyer very often. Some of his lawyers he can't see at all. His father can't get in hardly ever. His partner and their two children rarely can get in, and he can't touch them. And I know it's sick. It's sickening. And of course, you know, we have to bring in the one of the most sickening things of everything. It's like this Spanish firm, you know, UC Global, surveys him, you know, spies upon him with cameras here, even in toilets, for Christ's sakes. His partner and he were suspicious that this would be happening, and they had a tent in this little room where he was living for almost 7 years, so that they could make love without perhaps the cameras watching. And on top of that, the CIA, which was behind all of this, had plans to kill him, to kidnap him, to poison him, to have somebody inside the embassy under the new government, which we'll come to that in just a second, would leave the front door open so that they could send in their thugs to kidnap this man. His lawyers, his doctors, he could not go to a hospital. Doctors had to come to him. Interestingly, there's so many factors here. The two anonymous Spanish workers at this UC Global company were so appalled by the main owner, who told them that now he had this deal with the CIA and they were going to make a lot of money and they were going to do all of this. They left the agency, the firm. They didn't want to work with him. And one of them had been a co-owner and he sold his rights or whatever. And the courts, the Spanish courts, are trying the main manager, David Morales. One of the key lawyers for Assange today is also a Spaniard who was the Spanish judge who sent out a warrant of arrest for Pinochet in Chile. Pinochet was under an extradition hearing in London for 16 months. He was never in prison, and they finally gave it up, and he got to go back. England gave it up, and he went back to Chile and never faced trial. Now, here we have a mass murderer. I mean, a really mass murdering dictator that Kissinger put into office, who doesn't have to go to jail. Now, we've got an extradition hearing against the man who has not made one violent crime, not killed one person, is not even accused of it, and they're torturing him to death. And we've got this judge lawyer now on his side. I mean, it's just, so in any normal criminal case, a mafia case, a murderous case, when this can be introduced to a court that's trying this person, that, hey, he was surveyed, he was spied upon, he was plans to kidnap him and murder him by the same government that is asking you to extradite him to their prisons. Well, any court of law would automatically, immediately throw this case out of court. But these so-called fucking judges want to kill him because they're lackeys of the United States. Well, they have the same game. You know, they come from the same roots.
Well, there's a definite class aspect to this, too. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today to Ron Rittenour. Ron is a journalist, author, editor, and peace and social justice activist. The expat American has lived and worked in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Bolivia, and currently calls Denmark home. Some of Rittenour's many book titles include The Russian Peace Threat, Pentagon on Alert, Cuba Revolution in Action, Backfire, the CIA's Biggest Burn, and his latest book, still in progress, is Winding Brook Stories. Ron's articles feature on numerous online sites, including at thiscan'tbehappening.net, where his A Horror Story in Two Parts, Will England Send Assange the Messenger to America's Dungeons, and A Travesty of Justice, UK Caters to the US Government's Desire to Crush Assange, appear. Well, you mentioned a couple times, Ron, Vanessa Barreza. She is the judge or presiding magistrate, rather, of the hearings to extradite Assange back to the United States. She has promised that, or she had promised, that no judgment would be heard until after the U.S. elections, which, to many people's minds, made this case seem like it was political. There are conditions under British law that the extradition can't be granted, a few of them, and you outline them in your article, the first part of your horror story, Will England Send Assange the Messenger to America's Dungeons? Do you want to go down this list of what is being heard at these hearings?
Oh, well, that would take a long time in and of itself.
The conditions under British law that could throw this out is what I'm thinking.
Oh. Yeah, how would one define the conditions? I mean, let me answer this in part by saying that on November 21st, a group that I'm in is going to have a Zoom, international Zoom conference about this issue. And we're being the group that I'm in is called COVID-19 Global Solidarity Coalition. And we're co-sponsoring this. We're going to have this an hour and a half conference with people, the Pentagon Papers man, Daniel Ellsberg, Joe Laurie of Consortium News, Marjorie Cohn, who is a president of the National Lawyers Guild, a former president and a professor of law. And she's a lawyer, so she is going to be taking this matter up that we're talking about right now. Consortium News covered this better. I mean, they had all kinds of coverage every day, live coverage in every day. Craig Murray, who was an earlier ambassador from England to Uzbekistan, was a reporter for there. Now, the law says they cannot extradite anybody for any political motivation. Article 4 the UK law on extradition says it should not be granted if the offense for which extradition is requested is a political offense. Now, of course, a lot of the time spent in the court by the defense was to show that this is clearly a political case. Now, one of the aspects of this kangaroo court is that first the judge says, now we must understand, that the judge who appointed this judge was a woman who was totally in conflict of interest with the case because she and her husband owned shares in mass murdering companies, war industries. Her husband was an earlier minister of war. They call it minister of defense now. I mean, these are the warmongers that Assange was exposing. He exposed their names. They were a part of companies that he exposed.
This is Lady Lady Emma Arbuthnot, whose whose husband and son are heavily involved in the arms industry, and her husband was a senior member of British intelligence for many years too.
Right. So, I mean, right there. I mean, it says also there's a law, I've written it somewhere, I'm just doing research, I'm not doing anything original, that says that clearly if you've got a conflict of interest, and one cannot imagine that anybody could conclude that this is not a conflict of interest, you have to be out of the case. So after 2.5 years where she was involved, she says, oh, okay, I won't continue, and I'll appoint somebody. So she appoints this other thing who's not a lady yet. But, you know, she'll get to be a lady after she, you know, murders, if she is successful in our friend, comrade. And I get quite emotional. I'm sorry. But I mean, this is very dear to me. But, you know, but she still is in the case because she's the boss of this minor magistrate. And you saw throughout the whole time when the defense was speaking, bringing in witnesses, making motions, which she knew was going to happen, when it comes time for her to say yes or no to something, especially when it has to do with the defense, she opens up her laptop and she reads what she has written clearly before that hearing.
Well, and are we even sure it was she who was writing the orders?
Well, that's exactly one of the points in my articles. When her boss is the person we're just talking about.
But then again, Ron, I mean, why should she be original or think about the case when the actual British lawyers have a phalanx of American lawyers sitting right behind them who other people that have been witnesses to the proceedings, the few that have been allowed in, say that it seems to them, at least, that the British lawyers are just taking direction from the Americans.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was a script that was written by Goebbels and Stalin. And the mass media, you know, the New York Times, for example, only ran a couple, three stories. I don't know exactly how many, but it was just in the beginning. The Guardian ran more stories, but none of them really support this man. And the mass media is simply, helping. I mean, he's political. I mean, there is evidence. Isn't it political when the CIA wiretaps, or not wiretaps, but, you know, surveys with cameras of all sorts? When the two former employees of the Spanish security company testified, the prosecution didn't even question them. They didn't even try to deny that what they said was true or not true. The so-called judge simply said it was irrelevant. What happened in the Ecuadorian embassy had nothing to do with extraditing Assange or not. I mean,
this is very pertinent in the fact that conversations between Assange and his legal team were bugged. Any other legal proceedings where the prosecution is taping conversations between defendants and their lawyers, that would be automatic grounds for dismissal. Ron, we're fast running out of time for this segment, but the third element of this, the abuse of power as illustrated by the CIA's surveillance and the political motivation that seems obvious to everyone except Vanessa Baretza, the magistrate in charge, and the cruel and inhuman treatment of the prisoner if he should be extradited to the United States is the third leg of this stool that this court should be thrown out on. And the cruel and inhuman treatment that Assange is already experiencing in Belmarsh, if that's any indication of what the British court is willing to put up with, then I'm not so sure that they will. I'm pretty sure that they won't hear in his favor for the kind of similar treatment he might receive in the U.S.
The only thing I can say about that is that we shouldn't conclude that it's a hopeless case, that, you know, that it's lost and he's going to die. They're going to kill him. But, we also can't be naive and to think that we're going to succeed. But I listen a lot to what John Pilger has to say. You know, he was a great and is a great journalist. And the Guardian used to use him a lot. They called him up one day and said, "We don't want to use you anymore." He's like Seymour Hersh in the United States. You know, these are men who were just in the beginning objective journalists. And you can't be that any longer, you know. Well, Pilger and Craig Murray, the man I mentioned earlier, who was an ambassador and has come over to our side, when I've seen them speak about this, they hope and they think there's a chance that after this so-called judge does the bidding that she wants to do so that she can become a lady, that is to say, deny to let him out on bail and to extradite him to the U.S., well, then there is going to be appeals, and there will be appeals whoever wins on this level. And there's two other appeals, an appellate court and then the counter to the Supreme Court. Now, these are real judges, and in the first case, it's three judges, and in the second case, I don't know how many there are, but they see that there's some hope that these people will be a little bit more objective and take into consideration what their own laws say, you know, that they might read a law of their own land, which says that there should be a free press and we should have a trial of our peers and things of that sort. I hope that, you know, somehow or another, this man will get out on bail because I'm really worried for his life. But if he has to stay there another year, 2 years, 3 years because of the next two appeals, and if he can survive that, well, hopefully then they'll do him justice.
Yeah, and this is a thing. While these appeals go on, Assange is being held under these brutal conditions, and that in itself is, I think, largely the plan behind this prosecution. Ron and I are going to carry on. You can hear the balance of this conversation at guerrilla-radio.com.
Good, bad, and ugly news on Guerrilla Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. in Victoria on CFUV 101.9 FM, and anytime else at guerrilla-radio.com. That's Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every week.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking again to Ron Ridenour. Ron is a journalist, author, editor, and peace and social justice activist. He has lived and worked in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Bolivia, and currently calls Denmark home. Some of his many book titles include The Russian Peace Threat, Pentagon on Alert, Cuba Revolution in Action, Backfire, the CIA's Biggest Burn. His latest, and still in progress, is Winding Brook Stories. Ron's articles feature at thiscan'tbehappening.net, among other places. We're speaking today about his two article series, a horror story in two parts, Will England Send Assange the Messenger to America's Dungeons, and A Travesty of Justice UK Caters to the U.S. Government's Desire to Crush Assange. Well, Ron, tomorrow, as we record this on November 2nd, tomorrow, of course, is America's big day, the big election. Do you think, Ron, that it makes a difference should Donald Trump retain the presidency or Joe Biden prove out the winner in the end to Julian Assange?
No, absolutely not. My position on, I was a normal WASP in the United States whose father was a military man, and I went to in 1956 when Russia Soviet came into Hungary. I was an anti-commie, and I went to the military to fight commies. Well, I've come a long way since then, and what I've learned is that the Democratic and the Republican parties, you know, are the same. It's just, one party with two branches. And I've never, you know, supported one or the other. Although I must admit that when I just came out of the U.S., I didn't know anything. I mean, U.S. military, I didn't know anything. And I had a chance to vote for the first time in my life. And so I voted for Nixon. against Kennedy, you know. And since then, well, I woke up, you know, and so I've never voted for either party again. But I will say this time, and I've always discussed this with Dave Lindorf for several years now, with Obama and Clinton and all them. There's no fucking difference, and we're only helping the system by even contending that there's any difference, and we shouldn't vote for them at all. We should just kick ass on the streets and try to find a way of making a popular front, which could evolve into a real workers, socialist oriented party, but not with all the names and not with, you know, just, you know, I mean, a broad party, a real political party that's in the streets and in the unions and is not dogmatic. I mean, this is a longer discussion. I've been in the Communist Party myself in a couple of countries, and I learned that they weren't really communist. And, well, I'm not going to get into all of where I am politically. But I will say this, that for the first time since I voted for fucking Nixon, I will say that it is a little bit more now than the lesser of two evils. I was in Mississippi in the long, hot summer in 64 in prison for getting the right for people to black people to vote. At that time, Obama was just born. I was glad that a black person could get to be president, but Obama was as bad, in fact, even worse than the WASP, because we expected more of him. He was to represent his people. He was to represent something good. And what did he do? He didn't just continue the two wars of Bush. He added them. Seven. After all of this, I come to the conclusion that Trump has to go. I mean, we're not going to get anything out of Biden, but Trump is more murderous to black people. He will murder more black people. Trump has to go. He's going to legitimize fascism. We see his militias out in the streets, at local governments, at voting places. Guns loaded.
When we look at someone like, as you mentioned, Obama getting office, it takes the wind out of the sails of protest that he was carrying on those seven wars, unprecedented, and also kicking out an unprecedented number of so-called illegal aliens. There was very little opposition. There wasn't people in the streets opposing him, at least not the ones that would oppose Trump. From your vantage point still in Europe now, when you look home or to your former home in the United States and see the Black Lives Matter movement rising up in these last months, I was really interested, Ron, to read in your in-progress autobiography, My America, your earliest recollections as a child of 8 years old in your home of New Jersey at the time, seeing a young child shot down in something that's very reminiscent of what we're seeing today. Do you want to describe that maybe and how it comes full circle to what we're seeing through iPhone citizen journalism today?
Wow. You bring tears to my eyes, Chris. You've done some research. Well, yeah, but that was a momentous moment in my life. And I was asked about 30 years ago in Cambridge, in King's College, by somebody in the audience when I was talking about Cuba. And she said, she asked, you know, what is it that motivated you to become a revolutionary? And I hadn't been asked that question. I can't remember if I ever, and it took me a minute or so to, and it came up to me. That was the image. I was living with my grandmother and her lover, or whatever he was, and I was playing Roy Rogers. That's a, you know, was an old cowboy hero in the United States, and he had a horse Trigger, a Palomino, and and he was shooting Indians, you know, so. I was sitting on an easy chair, something on the arm, and I had chaps and a hat, and I had a toy gun, and I was riding my Trigger horse, and I was shooting up in the air, killing Indians, you know, that's where I was coming from, you know, killing Indians, for Christ's sake. And I heard a crack outside the window. And I didn't know anything about bullets. I mean, TV had just begun, And at any rate, but it sounded like maybe a bullet, or, you know, I didn't know what. But at any rate, I got off my horse and I went over to the window and I looked out, and there on the ground on the sidewalk, right in front of me, was a kid, a black kid, is about my age and about my size. And I think I saw blood. I saw something coming out of his back. He was lying on his stomach, and goddamn pig, you know, a fucking pig, you know, they call themselves policemen in blue uniform. I saw him come up to this guy. He had his pistol in his hand. And I was, you know, I was just, I was appalled. I was shocked. I couldn't assimilate what I saw. I don't remember any more of what I saw in that moment. But then, later in the day, my grandmother came home, and her lover there, and he said, "You heard on the news, you know, that the cop saw him steal an apple from a street, not a vendor, you know, but on the street, a kiosk, you know, so that, you know, they put out on the sidewalk some vegetables or fruits. This kid, according to this cop, stole an apple and walked away." Well, the cop was on his beat, and he saw this. So he says he yelled at the guy, at the kid, a child, to stop. Well, the kid was, you know, scared, and he ran. So the cop, law and order, United States of Democratic America, the cop takes his pistol and he shoots up in the air, he says. Well, you know, there's a lot of contamination, a lot of pollution in the air in the United States. So the bullet hits something up in the air, and, you know, lo and behold, it comes down in the back of this child. In the back of this child. And I'm talking about, this is like 1946, 47, and the kid's dead. But it's okay. And that's what happened. That's what my grandmother told me. She said to me, and I, you know, I was scared. And she said to me, "Ron, you don't have to be worried. You know? Two reasons. One, you're not a thief, and you're not black." Wow. I'm not black. I'll never be black, so I'm okay. Well, I can't tell you how I assimilated that at that moment. But when that woman asked me, a half a century later, what made me a revolutionary? That was it.
Well, now you're bringing tears to my eyes, Ron. And now, how many children, I wonder, look at the news and see these videos taken of people being murdered right in front of them? In the old days, they used to call them snuff movies. Now they're on the news. I watched a man being killed, shot down, and another black guy in this long list, this endless list of people. The American police shoot down kill more than 1,000 of their own citizens every single year.
Yeah. 4% of the population in the world, 25% of the prisoners. And now all the fucking jails, almost all of them, the prisons are in private hands. When you put some product in private hands, obviously, from sentence number one, the corporation, the capitalist, wants more products to make more profit. So you have to put more black people in prison to make more profits. It's the same logic that goes on with all the wars against people of color in the world. Almost everywhere in the world, the United States is murdering people. They're people of color. Now, there's one big problem right now, though, the people in the streets. I'm so proud of the brave people in the streets, the Black Lives Matter, whatever all they call themselves. It's great. I really wish I could be there with them. I would be in the streets. And about the plundering, well, I'll tell you this. I would throw some rocks myself, you know. I was in the Watts riot, the Watts uprising in 1965. In L.A., I was with a black woman in the Watts area, and I participated. I'll tell you that. and I would do it again today. But apparently, from what I read, also from the Black Gender Report, is a major honest source for me, some of these Black Lives Matter women leaders are in the hands of the Democratic Party and in their corporations. There's a lot of millions of dollars have been put into their coffers. And that is a sin. It's a crime. It's immoral. And it's not going to make us revolutionaries. It's not going to make us win. So whoever is in the streets, I'm sure that many people in the streets, and I wish I could talk with them, know what I'm talking about. They have to get rid of that. They have to denounce that. We need to have people who are clean of corruption, of money. We have to live simply, like the Bolivians who have just won their state again, the great movement for socialism there. And I appreciate Evo Morales. I think, you know, he should have not gone again for another vote, another election, but he's a great man. At any rate, their slogan, their slogan, their way of life is live well, don't live better. Live well means that we all have enough to eat, shelter over our heads. And live better means you never live better enough. You're there for more consumer goods, more vacations, more flights, more cars, more. That's what capitalism is. And that's the same with Trump and Biden and Obama. All of them, they're all rotten. You in the streets, you have to get rid of them. They're not working in our long-range interest.
Well, Ron, when you talk about Evo Morales, more than appreciate what he says and what he's been doing. You were actually a confidant of Morales while he was in power. You recently did an interview with Finian Cunningham, an old friend of this show, called The Threat of Peace, Why America Needs War with Russia and How to Stop It, which is published up at the strategicculture.org website. It's another Russian influence website, according to some sources, as we all seem to be. I found it, I've been doing a lot of, I've been covering the Bolivian elections and the reemergence of the mass party under Luis Arce, since the coup there. You know that the Canadian government was a big supporter of the coup government, the Añez government, that was overtly fascistic. I wonder what your take is on these early days. What do you think Arce can do in Bolivia now, in this divided Bolivia, and will the Americans again, I guess they are already sharpening their pencils for another coup?
Yeah, well, this is a touchy subject. You ask very good questions, and you do really good research. I was, I worked with Morales 3 days in a row at the COP15, you know, the climate conference in Copenhagen in 2009. And I worked with him again in Bolivia for a little bit in 2010 when he called for a people's climate conference. We were 35,000 people there. Morales did great things, great work. And I think maybe some of it went to his head. And that's a problem. But I don't know Arce. I don't know anything about him. I knew a little bit his vice president, Chacahuante. He was, when I knew him, he was in the Ministry of, the Secretary of State, according to the United States, you know. And I think he's a good man. He's a man of the people. And Morales is, too. There's no doubt about it. I think, I don't know enough. I haven't followed closely enough their campaign and who is Arce. But I have followed, you know, the coup government. And of course, they're going to be totally different than that. And they've already told the Organization of American States leader that, you know, he's a son of a bitch, that he's there as a lackey for the U.S. Because, you know, in the controversy about the election, the last election a year ago, did Morales get 50% plus one of the first returns? That would have avoided a another election with two candidates, or did he get less? And the OAS president then, under pressure in the U.S., said he didn't get 50-plus, but he did get the majority. And somehow or another, that ended up with the charges of fraud against Morales. So there was a coup d'etat. Now, I would say to RC, and not that I should be arrogant and say to them what they should do. What I mean to say is that when the government takes power officially, I think it's the 8th of November, I would caution that there has to be tremendous changes in the military. And I think that was a mistake of Morales, that they have to be cleaned up. The general who called for Morales's ouster had been trained by the School of Americas, you know, in Georgia and the United States, which is a school of torture. And it was exposed by good people, liberation theologist protesters, and it was exposed, and they changed their name. But they didn't change their goals, their strategy, and their tactics. They're still torturing. And so you can't have generals, and you can't have important people in military and police who are, you know, trained by torture, in torture method by the United States. So it has to be cleaned up. They have to do a lot of things to bring back Bolivia to the whole vision of live well for everybody and not live better for anybody, which means ending capitalism. But it's a process. They can't do it alone. And of course, Cuba was the first in Latin America that started that process in 1959. And they created the ALBA group, the group of Latin American countries, governments, progressive governments, socialist governments, socialist-oriented governments, to go in that direction peacefully, with Hugo Chavez from Venezuela, not to make revolutions, but peacefully. Well, it's a big question that we can't really get into in this radio interview as to whether or not that is even possible, to make real important revolutions for the masses of people in the world without the use of violence. But if violence comes, it always comes from the capitalists, from the fascists, from the right wing. It doesn't start from us. And then there's the question of how do we respond? So at this point in history, I would say that the response must be limited to self-defense at best, and civil disobedience. Self-defense meaning that if they shoot you, at you, you ought to have the right to shoot back. So Bolivia is faced with many changes, the many challenges, the new socialist movement, the government, and they don't have a lot of support. Maduro in Venezuela is quite weakened. Your country in the United States, the country where I live, they want a nobody who declares himself president in a press conference. They want him to be the president. This guy won Guaido. I mean, God damn it. They call themselves Democrats. They call themselves states of, what do they call them? States of rights, rights, just states of justice. And
rule of law.
Thank you. Rule of law. Comes up before a press conference and says, "I'm the president of Venezuela," and they accept him. I mean, George Orwell, for Christ's sakes, couldn't have written this. It would be beyond his imagination. Aldous Huxley could not have written this. I mean, reality is more fanciful than fiction. So Bolivia has a lot of challenges, and the CIA was always there, and they're always there, they're everywhere. And they in reality, it's the CIA that determines what happens, whether it's Trump or whether it's Biden. It's the CIA that determines what happens.
Well, some would say ever since John Kennedy, they didn't vote for him either, apparently, and they removed him. Well, Ron, in our country, Luis Arce has said he wants to strengthen ALBA. For one, that was his initial statement on that. And I've got to say that your interview with Finian Cunningham is one of the most enlightening ones I've read in a long time about this, and especially about Evo Morales and taking a critical look at him, because I saw him somewhat through rose-colored glasses. But I agree with you that he is a good man and in a difficult situation. In my own country, here in Canada, the Lima Group is a counterpoint to ALBA, and Canada is first among nations in trying to insert Juan Guaido, or Juan Guano, as I call him, into the presidency of Venezuela, and to grant him all the gold reserves held illegally in Britain and the gas stations in America and everything else. But to bring it around now, I mean, again, I'm talking today with Ron Ridenour, and Ron's a longtime journalist, author, editor. He's a peace and social justice activist. He lives now, an American who now lives in Denmark. You lived in Cuba for a long time, too, I don't know if we got time to talk about that as well. But we have been ostensibly talking about his two-part series at thiscan'tbehappening.net, a horror story in two parts. Will England send Assange the Messenger to America's Dungeons, and a travesty of justice UK caters to the U.S. government's desire to crush Assange? In the second part, in your second installment, The Travesty of Justice, as much as what is happening to Julian Assange is an outrage, what is happening to the very principle, the very idea of rule of law and justice itself, both in Britain and throughout America and its satraps around the world, is to me the greater issue. What's your take on the effect that this prosecution has on the principle of justice generally?
Yeah, I mean, it's really frightening. I mean, it's not just left-wing rhetoric anymore. I mean, we've always had our rhetoric, but I mean, this is really serious. I mean, this is really, we are really on the road to authoritarian rule a la fascism. And the most frightening of it all, I think the biggest indice of what I just said is that the mass media in many countries have ignored this case, this hearing, and have not supported. First is ignoring it, and secondly, not coming out very clearly and saying the attack on Assange is an attack on us, on all media. All free press. Now, free press, free speech. You know, whoever said it first, I don't know. But we all know that the first casualty of any war is truth. And when they work to murder slowly a man who gives us the truth, because there's no question, there's no absolute, nobody can question what he publishes. Is not fact, is not truth. He simply publishes what happens and what is said by the leadership of these governments. So when he is abandoned, that means truth is abandoned, free press is abandoned, free speech is abandoned. And when these are the most important features, among the most important features of our very existence, of course, the right to have food in our stomachs, the right to have shelter in our heads, the right to simply exist is important and equally important. And many people, of course, unfortunately, Trump supporters would say, you know, well, I just want a job and a sandwich here and there. And if Trump can provide that, then, you know, glory, hallelujah. You know, so, I mean, we are definitely on the road to fascism. When this so-called Secretary of State in the United States, who was CIA director under Trump, you know, when he can come to a university last year, Texas A&M, I think, to an audience, I don't know how this happens, you know, but somebody in the audience photographed what he said. I want this to be the headline of all of our media, of all of our websites. I want this to be there permanently. This son of a bitch said he graduated from ROTC to be, you know, an officer in the military. And he was taught, we don't lie, we don't cheat, we don't steal. And then he said to his audience, I got to be the director of the CIA. And what did I learn? We lie, we cheat, we steal. And then what did he say? Of course, he didn't say we kill, you know. And of course, at ROTC, at the university, you know, the Air, the military, they don't say we don't kill. Of course, that's what they're all about. But we don't lie, we don't cheat, we don't steal. And then he said, this is what is real fascism. He said, it's like the experiment of the glory of America. Now, what are you supposed to understand of that? My conclusion is, this is what we call the American exceptionalism. That is to say, that it's quite all right for all Americans, also the working class, to lie, cheat, and steal, because that's the glory of America.
Well, and that glory was on full display just the other day when it's revealed that the American Navy intercepted oil tankers going from Iran to Venezuela. And not only did they steal all of the oil on board, they also sold for their own profit the actual oil tanker itself. Ron, in closing, Ron's website again is ronridenour.com. That's Ron, RIDENOUR, Ridenour. .com. And in it, you say of your beginnings, Ron, you say, quote, in shame and anger at what the U.S. really does against peoples at home and around the globe, I took responsibility. And you're still taking it all these very many long years later. RonRidenour.com to see his work, his books, his many, many articles, and other links to other interesting things that he's done. And I thank you for coming on today and spending some of your time with us, Ron.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure. You are a really good interviewer and a sympathetic, empathetic person, a decent human being.